The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Thank you very much, Shane. Now, there's a busy summer bank holiday ahead with travel and festivals, and with that always comes an increase in attendances at our emergency departments and hospitals. After changes in working practices since the February bank holiday weekend, which saw 617 waiting on trolleys after the weekend, where just 10% of consultants were actually working, can we expect the bank holiday weekend to be managed better? Well, joining us now is Grace Rothwell, National Director for HSE Access and Integration. Grace, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, talk to me about the changes that have been brought about to try and deal with that excess of trolleys.
So you correctly referenced the St. Bridget's bank holiday weekend this year, and certainly since that, with, I suppose, discussion and direction from the Minister and colleagues at HSE national level, significant focus now on increasing the range of staff that are working over 7 days. Mm. Traditionally in hospitals, Monday to Friday, very, very busy, less so at weekends. So significant focus on increasing, in particular, the presence of senior decision makers in our emergency departments, yeah, and indeed at ward level to ensure discharges, you know, over the weekend,
sure,
period. And since the Bridget's weekend, that has actually improved with each of the bank holidays since then.
Now, we must bear in mind that there was a particular surge at that time. People think that COVID has gone away. COVID had not gone away, certainly in February. There was a bit of a surge which gave rise to greater numbers in the EDs. But still, if that prompted an action that was long overdue, so be it. Great.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I suppose the thing with hospitals is, and emergency departments, whilst in the main we can predict within a certain range the volume of people that we expect, some little things can throw that out of kilter. For example, in respect of COVID, whilst overall the activity at the moment during the summer remains at low to moderate levels and lower than last year, some hospitals will experience, you know, a little bit of a spike. Some nursing homes will have a little bit of a spike, and that may well result in persons in nursing homes being transferred to hospitals. So little things can impact the overall system and individual hospitals in particular.
Now, before we talk about what the options are for people who find themselves in medical distress over the bank holiday weekend, just the general thing of trying to implement what the minister would like to see happen, given it's also holiday time. So I would suspect any August it's going to be challenging to get the requisite number of personnel in Monday to Friday, never mind at a bank holiday weekend.
Absolutely. And that's the focus. We now have regions in the HSE. So at regional level, there's 6 regions throughout the country, and there has been significant and sustained focus really since the St. Bridget's weekend on implementing 5/7 working. So rosters and in the knowledge of people being on leave are well planned in advance and reinforced then with additional staff. And to your point, difficult to get the requisite number of staff. Our staff are fantastic. They really are up and down the length and breadth of the country. And once there's a plan and people are engaged with and people are asked to support the bank holiday period and so on and so forth, you know, staff do come forward and they do,
yeah,
that.
And yet, yeah, you have to bear in mind, obviously, that nursing and staff and doctors and others and porters, everybody, I mean, many of them are, you know, have families they have to be mindful of, and it's holiday time and the schools are only closed for the months of July and August. So they've got to take their holidays when they can. So those kind of acute periods must be very challenging for the HSE.
Absolutely, very challenging. And people do need to take their holidays because we need our staff in good form and in good working order right throughout the year. But again, that is up to individual hospitals supported by their regions to plan accordingly. And we have good, solid plans in place for this August bank holiday.
Now, this is where we're coming from. We want, you want us all to think about what we do if we have a medical emergency. I mean, obviously, if you have something massive like heart attack, stroke, you have to do the right thing and end up in a hospital ASAP. But generally speaking, what advice would you give us about contemplating what we should do if we have a mild to medium sort of medical emergency?
Yeah. So there are, first to note, there's many care options. Our local pharmacist, you know, font of knowledge, really experienced personnel is probably your first port of call. GPs, daytime, GP out of hours, again, you know, very, very experienced professional people, and I would recommend GP out of hours. The HSE website actually has some very good information on symptoms and common ailments and how to treat them. Injury units, again, detail on the HSE website where they are available. And injury units treat injuries that are not life-threatening. They're open 7 days a week. You don't need an appointment. And they treat ailments such, you know, minor injuries, yeah, some broken bones, burns, you know, things like that. But I have to stress for those that are seriously ill, you know, head injuries, chest pains, shortness of breath, seizures, they should go directly to the emergency department. Why we ask people to consider, you know, the right door, if you like, is if everybody went to the emergency department, there's a huge volume of people, and that in itself, you know, delays and impacts on a patient's experience time. So if those with minor ailments look to other options, there's less of a volume in the emergency department, and those people then have less of a wait to be seen.
Now, the question of minor injuries clinics and when they're open, I mean, you really want those to be almost 24/7, not just 7 days a week, but perhaps 24/7 to give the same kind of access. But I don't think they do open those kind of hours. So if you have, you know, a broken arm in the middle of the night, you're going to go to A&E.
Absolutely. And that's the case. Largely, they're open 8 to 8. There's some variance. It is on the website and there's work underway to ensure that they all have consistent hours of opening. And indeed, there's work underway to increase the number of minor injury facilities around the country. But you're correct. You know, any time outside of that, go straight to the local emergency department.
Now, you also mentioned GP out of hours, and a lot of the time, even though you have multi-doctor practices and none of them actually do the out-of-hours work, it goes to a doc-on-call kind of situation. And that is difficult, because although they may have access, and I'm not sure it's always true, access to the patient's records, they would tend to be conservative. I mean, you know, you'll end up probably being referred to A&E anyway, because they don't know you well enough to know whether what is wrong with you is typical or otherwise.
Yeah, and I absolutely take that point. Again, I suppose there's significant coverage provided by GP out of hours, and you know that would you'd often hear that in conversation that we will be sent to the emergency department. In actual fact, the percentage is only about 10% of those that present to the GP out of hours subsequently are directed to the emergency department. You know, a lot of times people may have a sore throat and that can be an antibiotic or whatever the case may be. There would be a significant volume, again, of minor illnesses that do contact GP and GP out of hours. But for anyone that has, you know, shortness of breath or something that is, you know, suggesting life-threatening, they absolutely should attend the emergency department.
Yeah, and of course, the things like bacterial meningitis, which terrifies parents, there's that little tumbler test, the glass tumbler test, if there's a rash present. And if the rash doesn't disappear when you press that glass tumbler on the rash, then off you go as quickly as possible.
Absolutely. And again, fantastic paediatric coverage in our emergency departments up and down the length and breadth of the country.
Grace Rothwell, National Director for HSE Access and Integration, thank you very much for joining us. Now we're going to Waterford, where JJ Clark, who's a columnist with the Irish Independent, he's prepping to go to the All Together Now Festival. JJ, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How's it going?
I'm very well here, sitting in the studio, not going anywhere. But you are heading for the All Together Now Festival. You're, I suppose, a veteran festival goer, so you have your hacks for getting through a festival in one piece.
Precisely. So I'm sitting in a wedged car in a car park in Waterford at the moment, just about to drive in and pitch my tent. So basically what I have is I have like a number of things, and I've broken it down into before, during and after things you need to remember. So the basics are tent, sleeping bag and toilet roll. And you can't really go wrong with those three things. But then you add in water, food, not just alcohol. There's a limit of 24 cans or 1.5 litres of wine or spirit. You could probably...
Are you, checked on the way in? Is that the
idea?
You
are indeed, but you can get clever and you can try and sneak them in, or, you know, it's not beyond people to, you know, decant, you know, alcohol into sunscreen bottles. I've heard it done, you know, never done it myself now, but, you know, there are ways, you know, to sort of navigate that. Also on top of that, power bank, you should go in fully charged. It's cashless. It's completely cashless. So you don't need cash. Don't bring it. There's no point. You don't need that rattling around in your pockets. And then there's charging stations in there. But to be honest, I don't think you should, you know, you should rely on them because the queues are long.
Mm-hmm.
Then when you get in there, the big one is location, location, location. So when it comes to choosing an area to pitch your tent, ask yourself, you know, is it downwind from the toilets? You know, secondly, do my neighbors like techno music? And thirdly, you know, do the newlyweds next to me, you know, are they, you know, overly amorous? You know, their cavorting is going to keep me up at night. Don't pitch a tent next to them. So these are things you need to like bear in mind. And if the answer is yes to any of those questions, go somewhere else. You know, you don't just, you know, buy a house, you walk the neighborhood. So, you know, measure twice, cut once.
Yeah, I remember when I was doing the Reeks Walk many years ago, and I was going to the Climbers Inn in Kerry, and we're going to pitch my tent in the field next to it. And we arrived very late at night, and it was jammed. The field was absolutely jammed, but there was one little bit of space where we could pitch the tent. So myself and a guy called Sean, we pitched our tent in pitch darkness, and it was great. It was absolutely fabulous. Woke up, and the tent was full of horseflies and flies. The reason the square of space was there was it was full of cow patties. We'd pitched our tent on top of the couch.
Oh, yuck.
So there.
Yeah, that's the danger of camping or pitching your tent, you know, late at night. And you know, especially on the side of a hill like next to Crowpatrick would be dodgy enough. Another thing I'd say is that I've heard of, you know, is if you bring a combination lock with you, and the first portable toilet that you encounter, you lock it. And so then for the entire weekend, you have a pristine Jax that, you know, it's not used by anyone else. Now, bear in mind, the organizers probably would take, you know, get the wire cutters out and chop it. But like, it's worth, you know,
you might
trying.
Get a day and a half out of it before you're...
Yeah, exactly. And like, you know, that comes back to the other things that you can do. So I think there's two types of people that go to festivals. There's a type of people that, you know, concert heads that are like, we should go see this act. But like, no one wants the sort of controlling Colin with the laminated itinerary. You actually, you know, you should pick three acts a day. Stick to that and then just have an experience. You know, there's no such thing like as scheduled fun, like, you know, as the Germans would say, but you should try and see three acts and then, you know, sort of amble around. There's like plenty of like time to see those acts. And then on top of that, I would say, you know, as far as dress goes, they're all bets are off. It's literally, you can wear whatever you want. Be it a tennis player dressing up as a sheep or, you know, head to toe in sequins, you should, you know, people will appreciate it. You will just, people will be constantly coming up to you if you, you know, go in an outfit, like, which is it's sort of what festivals are all about. It's about, you know, adults going into a field and acting like children.
Well, you know, when you said, you know, clothing, I was thinking of rainwear and boots and ponchos. Yeah. I wasn't thinking of tennis outfits in the middle of a field. Tell us this, the actual location itself, you've been there twice before, so you're familiar with it. What is the setting like?
Okay, so Curramore Estate, it's in Portlaw in County Waterford, so it's about 25 minutes outside the city. And you have the campsites that are about, I'd say about 800 metres from the main stage area. It's in a sort of woodland area, and you're sort of surrounded by sort of trees and gently sloping hills. And then from the campsite areas down towards the country estate, which is one of those typical old, you know, landed gentry estates. It's gorgeous, and they have gardens, and they have a pond area, and then just in the main stage area, it's similar to Slane in that it's a natural amphitheatre. Mm-hmm. So you have sort of a hill, sort of kind of coming down into an almost a C shape in front of the main stage, but it is really beautiful. And if the weather holds out, you're flying, like, you know. And it's over 21, so there's, like, you know, there's less messing around and, you know, trouble and anything like that. I've been there twice. And
now, JJ, we were talking to the HSE if anything untoward happens, and I'm sure they have medical tents and all of that. And if anyone had an emergency at a festival, they would be hauled out of there in an ambulance very quickly. But in terms of bringing your own meds, what do you bring for recovery purposes or for any other mild medical emergencies you might encounter at the festival?
Well, you see, I'm perfectly moderate, Pat, so I don't have to worry about that. But just for anyone else, I would say in the mornings, Diorolite. So basically just what you would have after a run or a marathon, just basically hydration sachets that you can get in the chemist, cheapest chips, and then also painkillers. So your likes of Panadol, Nurofen, but just making sure that, you know, you have them to go in the morning if you have a sore head. And then on top of that, like, just have 2 liters of water there with you the whole time. Also, just on the way out, you know, come Monday morning, you should be aware of, you know, like any bank holiday weekend, there's going to be guarded checkpoints, you know, so don't blow hot. There's the RSA, Road Safety Authority, have these breathalyzers around the actual site so that you can breathalyze yourself on Monday or whenever you're leaving.
And stay put if you're over the limit, stay put.
Yes, exactly. And you can sit it out for a couple of hours, and it will give you estimated wait times until the alcohol is out of your system. So it's like the advice there is just don't be an idiot, you know, just hang on, you know, what's it worth to you? Just a couple of hours sitting around, yeah, you know, reminiscing about the festival.
And the last question then is about, you bring in a certain amount of food and drink, but if you have to purchase on site, how expensive might it be?
Right. So, just in general, coffees are €4, and I'm talking max price here, so you can just set your budget just off that. And then drinks, you know, alcoholic drinks, that is, are around €9 to €10. They might be under that, it depends on the vendor. And then sort of like a standard burger meal or, you know, chips and a main meal, it'll come to about €18 to €20. So just have that in mind. So if you budget maybe, you know, €35 to €40 per day, so 120 max, then
you're
probably
go hungry.
Good. Yeah, you won't go hungry and you'll be all right.
Very good. JJ Clark, columnist with the Irish Independent, thank you very much for joining us. Now, if you are heading to Altogether Now, make sure to go to the Go Loud tent. You'll find Kieran Cuddy there heading the Strangers Quiz, Sean Defoe with a live Let Me Explain podcast, and more of the News Talk team, including Andrea Gilligan and Frank Graney. All that at the Go Loud tent at Altogether Now this weekend.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.